For more presentations like this, visit www.xenos.org.
All right, what I continually just enjoy so much about this study of Jeremiah is how personal it is. This is really a book like no other in the Bible about the heart of humanity, the heart of God's servant, the heart of God himself, the new heart that God is going to build into his people, which we'll get to later, not tonight. But there's just something refreshing about the unrefined, unfiltered, unedited exchanges that you see that come from the heart of Jeremiah as he engages with God. And a couple of weeks ago, we saw that as we were talking about Jeremiah learning the heart of God for a disobedient people and for a people who are going to experience the peril of removing themselves from God's protection. And tonight we want to talk a little bit more about the heart and some things about Jeremiah, his experience, that I think in some ways are very much representative of the heart of anyone who takes God seriously and decides, you know, what I want to be about in my life is the things of God. I think this passage is an important one, the dialogue that God and Jeremiah have on the question of disputing with God, Jeremiah 15, verses 15 to 21. So, if you've ever disputed with God, this will be helpful. If you haven't, you will. So there you go. Let's get into our passage. This is verse 15. Lord, he says, you know what's happening to me. Please step in and help me. Punish my persecutors. Please give me time. Don't let me die young. It's for your sake that I'm suffering. Okay, now some of us would kind of say that sort of thing to God, perhaps in an exaggerated state of despair over our lives. Jeremiah is not in an exaggerated state of despair. Jeremiah is dealing with the fact that he has been out there and he's been interacting with priests and kings and common folk and just all sorts of people, and he's trying to bring them to reality about the fact that times are bad and they're going to get a whole lot worse, and God just wants you to return to him and trust him and not on your own resources and come under his protection. And the people are like, no, you know, we want to go our own way. We want to do our own thing. We like a God that we can sort of visit on the Sabbath and then do our own thing the rest of the time. And Jeremiah has been saying, you know, this, we're way past the time where that's going to work. And the people are not really wanting to hear that. And so there have been plots to kill Jeremiah, that he's been chased out of the temple. He's been chased out of town. And basically, they're just saying, we're tired of you and the horse you rode in on. And so Jeremiah now is just, he's in his agony. He's calling out to God and he's saying, don't let me die young. And we know Jeremiah became a prophet probably as a teenager, 17, 18 years old. So he is a young man and he's got the weight of a lot of things riding on him. So he's calling out to God. And then in verse 16, it says, when I discovered your words, I devoured them. They are my joy and my heart's delight, for I bear your name, O Lord of hosts. I never joined the people's merry feasts. I sat alone because your hand was on me. I was filled with the indignation at their sins. And so now Jeremiah is approaching God and he's telling him, you know, hey, you know what I've been about. You know who I am. And it doesn't take long, especially in the context of the passage as it unfolds, to realize what Jeremiah really is doing here is he's complaining. And he's saying, look, you know, I've been faithful, God, in everything that you've called me to do. I've responded. He says, I discovered your words. I devoured them. They're my joy and my delight. You know, when you revealed yourself to me, it's like, wow. What could be sweeter than that to hear from God? And Jeremiah was a guy who was deeply committed to the word, and he understood what God was about. He understood the heart of God, and because of that, he was able to see with such clarity what was really happening with the people around him, the people that he loved. And he says to God, you know, I've kept your word. I believe your word. I've delighted in what you've had to say, and truth really matters to me. And he says, I bear your name. I've been your guy. I've been your servant. All these people that I'm interacting with, they're far from you. And they use your name just in a formalistic way. Maybe like the way that many people would say, yeah, I'm a Christian. You know, in our culture, it's like, I don't even know what the Christian message is, and I haven't been to church since I was, you know, three, but I'm a Christian. Because why? Because I'm an American or something like that. And that would be very much the kind of social mentality that took root among the Israelites of Jeremiah's day. But he says, I'm not like that. I bear your name. I've been your servant. And not just that I've stood in there and I've told your word to people when it's been unpopular. He says, I've been willing to endure the consequences. He says, I sat alone because your hand was on me. I've taken that lonely position of being that lone voice of reason, that one who's willing to tell the truth when nobody really wants to hear it. And so they're out there having their parties, they're having their fun, and they're mocking me and distancing themselves from me, and they think that I'm just a joke or whatever. And I'm a lonely man. Because why? Because I've believed you, God, because I'm your servant and because I've spoken your word. And so in this sense, you know, what is Jeremiah doing? And what's wrong with his litany of complaints here? What's he doing really? There's an assumption and an expectation behind what Jeremiah is saying. And what he's saying is, I've done my part, God, haven't I? I've taken your word seriously, I've taken that stand, and I've been willing to endure the consequences. And I think that part of the heart that Jeremiah is describing here is the heart of everyone who's beginning to learn a life of service to a world that's not immediately responsive to what God has to say through us. And that expectation is that if I'm doing the right things, good things should happen. And there are lots of people, in my experience, I would definitely include myself in their number, who at various points in our lives as Christians, and we have taken seriously this idea that God's got a calling on our life, that we want our life to count for the things of Him. We want to be about His Word. We want to stand on that word and make truth an issue in our relationships with other people. We want to be about Christian ministry. Boy, I think that the vast majority of us are here tonight because that's exactly what we're about. That's exactly what we want to see. And yet, sadly, like Jeremiah, sometimes we go through spells, and maybe not just spells, but significant lengths of time in our life where we're really not getting much response. The people are not delighted with our insights or want to hear what we have to say. That we're met with more or less complete indifference. It's like we're not making any difference at all. And that's very frustrating. And sometimes at the end of the day, we find ourselves at this place with God, just like Jeremiah. Hey, God, I've done all the right things. I've equipped myself to be your communicator. I've stood in the gap and done that. But the response is not there. And so we find ourselves kind of upset, maybe angry at that point. And we're saying to ourselves, look, you know, I'm keeping up my end of the bargain, God. What's wrong here? The problem is that you're not keeping up your end of the bargain. But I know that there are many of us here who have struggled with this and with this kind of confusion, real confusion, we have an opportunity to go one of a couple different directions. And one of those directions is extremely perilous. And the other is a way that we're going to really get some clarity on our life. And I want us to be able to think tonight about the thought that perhaps maybe you are a person who's at this place. That you are feeling a sense of frustration about your life before God as His servant. That things haven't gone well for you necessarily. That what you've been doing hasn't been keeping with the expectations that you might have had for the difference that you could have made in this world for the things of God. And that at the end of the day, you're wondering, well, so where is God in all this? As I've done all my things, I've done the right stuff. Maybe God has a problem here. And I think that this is what we're seeing. The effect of this type of thinking can be measured along the lines of what we see in Jeremiah's own life from this and other passages that are relevant to us. The focus that Jeremiah has here on duty, and five times in that just two sentences, really, two verses, I. And I've done this thing, and I have been about your word, and I've suffered in this way. And that focus, you know, when things are tough and we're not getting the kind of response from people that we feel like we should be getting, we turn inward just like Jeremiah did. And what we're focusing in on is what I've been doing, what I've been trying to accomplish. And there's this sort of a dutiful focus at this point that hey, I don't know about these people, but I know what I've been about. I know I'm doing the right kind of thing. And this is where Jeremiah has been. There's been this urge to quit. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Jeremiah's like, man, if I could only find an oasis out in the desert, some shack out there, and just leave these people because they drive me nuts, you know? And boy, if you got kids, if you're married, if you want to be married, if you got a human relationship that's deeper than skin deep, you understand what does it mean to want to quit a relationship. People are complicated. And it's just really hard to want to continue to move toward people, to care about them, and feel like, man, I'm being shut down here. Hey, I've done my thing. I've been faithful, and now I quit. And there is that mentality there, and Jeremiah had it. That loss of purpose, that why has God called me to begin with, you know, and the thought that there was at one time this real vision for my life that it would matter for the things of God, that I really wanted to accomplish great things for Him. I haven't been seeing much of the evidence of that lately. And so there's that confusion that enters into our lives. And then other things begin to compete for our hearts and for our loyalty and for our attention. And we begin to just wonder, you know, what am I even doing anyway? And Jeremiah would fit into that category. Jeremiah is a man who's really being driven at this stage of life by his fear. Save me, God. They want to kill me, he says. And so there is that element as well, a fear that, well, what's my life really all about? Am I going to accomplish anything that matters? Maybe that the opposition is greater than the strength that I have to endure it. And Jeremiah is at this place too. And funny, as Jeremiah complains, it's just like God never does enter into the equation at all. And he's just completely lost his way. And he's just completely immersed in his experience and the fears that drive him and the things that are competing for his heart and the dutiful focus of I'm just stepping through the motions, I'm doing what I'm supposed to do, but the real life and vigor and vitality of his life is just gone. And a lot of us, I think, go through these kind of experiences as we seek to live our lives before God and seek to be servants for other people. It's just, I think it's the inevitable result of living in a world that doesn't match our expectations. We want to live in a world where if I'm doing the right thing, then the right things will follow. If I'm trying hard enough and observant enough and obedient enough and I know enough, I'll be able to make a difference. And then we, under that belief, we go out there and we get creamed. And it just raises these questions in our minds. We wonder, where is God? And sometimes this complaining can go a step further in the direction that Jeremiah begins to go. Maybe you can relate to him. I think you can, many of us. But where does he go? Verse 18, he says, why does my suffering continue? My wound is so incurable, he says. Your help seems as uncertain as a seasonal brook, like a spring that has gone dry. Okay, this is not a complaint anymore. You see what Jeremiah is doing now? He's beyond whining, And he's going direct to accusation. And now he's saying something about God. Why does my suffering continue? And then he says, hey, you know, I'm injured beyond fixing, and it's your fault, God. You are as uncertain as one of these little creeks that dries up from June through the end of the year, and we just see for that little bit of time as the snow melts. God, that's who you are. For a while, it did seem that you were in the mix, that you could be relied on, that you were really there, that you cared, that there was a closeness, and that when I learned the things that you wanted to teach me and I began to experience those things and began to share them with other people, that there was something cool going on there. And I sensed that closeness to you, and I could see you at work. But, you know, the reality is that the weeks and the months and the years are beginning to pile up, God, and I'm beginning to form the conclusion that you're not all marked up to be. You're just not that reliable. You're like that brook that's dried up. And so here I am trying to do the right thing with people who don't really care that much about the right thing, and you're nowhere to be found. And so there's this kind of accusatory loneliness, really, that Jeremiah is describing here. I alone am trying to do the right thing, and God has gone out of town on the last train. And so here I sit, and it's God's fault. And there is a perilous sort of calculation that begins very subtly, it seems to me, to enter in the heart of a servant who is struggling, whose complaining turns to accusation, and we begin to put pieces together in a very dangerous way. And we begin to look at our life sort of as a cost-benefit analysis, and that good accounting mentality comes out, and we weigh the advantages of living our life for God in relation to the cost that decision is bringing to us, and we realize, and you know, there's just a whole lot more cost involved in this than there is benefit. And many people will come to this place in their Christian life. Maybe early on, you did sense that God was that spring brook, and there was something alive and vital and refreshing, and it was just so cool to know that God was at work. But now, you know, it's just, that's a distant memory for us. And now what we're faced with is the drudgery, the duty of continuing on, more or less feeling like I'm on this, doing this all by myself. And we're wondering in our hearts, is it really worth it? And many of God's people erase the board. Every one of God's people that I've met and I've worked closely with over the years has come to a place where they've wondered that very question. Is it worth it? Is it worth the sacrifice that I'm undergoing to continue on with Christ when I have all kinds of opportunities to go someplace else? Is this whole living for God thing, putting his concerns first, is that really measuring up for me? Now, of course, most people wouldn't be that blunt. They wouldn't be that honest. And instead, what we're doing with our cost-benefit analysis is maybe that we're just backing off a little bit about what does it mean for me to live for the things of God. And we add some other things into the equation to sweeten the benefit side a little bit. And so we just maybe get caught up in a little bit of distraction, a little bit of things that, you know, take the edge off, like a good stiff drink of the world system or whatever, to anesthetize us from, from the difficulties that we really do face. But at the end of the day, we may realize I am calculating here. And I'm really wondering, is it really worth it for me to continue on in the things of God. And we can do that because we know that this can all go away. The burden that you may experience as you seek to serve another person on behalf of Jesus Christ and to be, you know, to experience rejection or to experience an icy distance or to experience sort of a sense of being mocked or whatever. You know, you know that it's possible that all of that can go away, that most of the things that you are struggling with are there because of a decision that you made to pursue Christ to begin with. And so I can just basically say no to that. And a lot of this concern that I have, this weighed down feeling, this sense of pressure maybe that I feel, much of that can just be very much dissipated, and I can just go on with my life. Jeremiah is asking the question, is God really reliable? And I just want you to understand what an awful position Jeremiah is in. We've been talking week after week as Jeremiah has been writing these words from God to the people, and he's been calling to attention their idolatry, their substitute gods, the things that they are seeking for their own satisfaction to extract a sense of identity, things that they're relying on. And Jeremiah has rightly been saying over and over, none of these things are worthy of your trust. None of these things can sustain the weight of real life in this world. And Jeremiah was so right on. But what a terrible place he has come to now, where he's on the one hand looked at the world, judged it for what it has to offer, finds that it's lacking, turns to God, and feels that same sense of emptiness. That same sense of emptiness. He's useless to the world. His convictions run counter to what the world has to offer. But he's not finding satisfaction in the things of God either. He's a shell of a man at this stage of the game. That's a heavy level of suffering. Now, God wants to speak to Jeremiah. And he says to him, this is how the Lord responds to this, Jeremiah. In your complaining, in your accusations, you know. If you return to me, he says, I will restore you so that you can continue to serve me. If you speak good words rather than worthless ones, you'll be my spokesman. You must influence them. Do not let them influence you, he says. So there's a couple of points here that we want to be getting at, because for me to just kind of lay it out as I've described, which is, I think, really in a subterranean way, some of the currents that run through our own hearts, the doubts that we often really do have and that really are there. You know, we know that theologically, those are not acceptable points of view, right? And so, therefore, I must not have them, right? You see what I'm saying? If what I'm putting forth is not right, then I can't possibly believe that, because I just believe the right things, right? But that's not the way it is. See? And there are these currents that run through the fallen and broken heart of every human being who seeks to be a servant for God. And it's in his mercy, I think, that God brings these things to the light. And he says, let's talk about this. Let's talk about this complaint, this accusation that really is there. And so this is how he responds, by giving assurance along two very important lines. Five times in these verses 19 through 21, I think countering each of the times that Jeremiah is referring to himself in the previous verses, God says what he will do. Five times God says, this is what I'm going to do, Jeremiah, and they fit into two basic categories. The first is restoration. Jeremiah, he says, I will restore you. I know that you look to me as this kind of dried up creek with nothing really to offer. But the reality is, Jeremiah, I will restore you. You know, misery is not God's way. I came to a point in my Christian life, this has been a number of years ago now, where I wasn't having very much fun. And fun's very important for me to have. I need to have my fun. And life was hard. Home life was challenging. Work was difficult. I was at a fairly difficult point in my life, and I just remember, you know, thinking to myself, oh, just grit your teeth and, you know, plow through it. Just go. Just do. And how just terribly empty that is. And the reality is that God does not want us to be miserable. And, you know, so you're here tonight and you're suffering servant. And you think, well, you know, I'm just doing my thing, you know. And yeah, it sucks, but hey, you know, I'm tough. So we kind of turn into this moment of despair, this kind of misery, maybe this kind of quiet desperation that's so much a part of the culture as people get older, especially. And God's not into that. And so we need to ask this question, the question that really God is bringing to our attention here. What needs to be changed? Do the circumstances need to be changed for Jeremiah to have some joy back in his life and a sense of hopefulness and vision and so forth? And the answer to this, of course, is no. No for two reasons. No because it's not necessary, and no because it's not going to happen. Okay. A situational fix will not deal with the problem that I'm describing here. The situation's not going to change. Hey, God's not going to change either. So what does that leave us with? Guess we're going to have to change. Indeed, he says, if you return to me, there's a choice involved here. And he is calling on Jeremiah to realize, you know these things in your heart. I'm not surprised by them. They don't offend or shock me in any way. But you don't have to stay there. There are decisions that you can make, and those decisions revolve around this idea of returning to me. Return to me in your heart. Surrender your expectations. Surrender this belief that if I just did the right things, that good things will flow. That's great Taoism. That's acceptable Buddhism. That's Orthodox Islam. That is not biblical. We don't live in a yin-yang world. We're not governed by karma. Good things happen to good people. Bad things happen to the bad. It's not like that. And God is calling on Jeremiah, you know, to do the right thing, knowing that most of his life, he will be rejected by his own people. And God has not called us to victory in the sense that God has called us to success in the things that we think are really important that we accomplish for him. God has called us to faithfulness. God has called on us to trust him with whatever the results happen in the lives of the people around us that we choose and we desire to serve. But we've got to deal with this expectation that if I just know the right things and say the right thing and do the right thing, that these results are going to happen in my life and through me to other people. Because it just doesn't go down like that. And so there's an invitation in returning to him to experience God just for who God is. It's an invitation to return to the love of God. To say, I know that I'm more important to you than just the sum total of the things that I do, that what you desire for me is not what I can accomplish, but it's me that you want. And so there is all this discussion in Jeremiah, and we see it reflected throughout the Old and New Testament. God is our Father. He calls us to relationship with him. Okay, so we have been in a failing mode. And maybe we've had something to do with that failure. It doesn't really matter. And maybe we've got these complaints and even more, some accusation. And God's not freaked out by that. God's not appalled at that. God's just saying, hey, I got an idea. Why don't you just return to me? Why don't you just come under my loving care as your heavenly Father? He's calling him to grace. He's not pointing out, you blew it here, you exaggerated over there, you lost this opportunity here, Jeremiah. Where's your head, Jeremiah? You're so screwed up, Jeremiah. I'm so disappointed in you. None of that language is there. And he's just saying, how about just return to me now? And that's God's consistent message to humanity. It doesn't matter to God where you were last night or where you've been these last weeks or months. And maybe you've been really far from God in your heart and maybe far from God in your behavior as well. And maybe, you know, you're one of these people who have come here tonight with a bit of a load of guilt. You know, that I'm just aware of how far I am from the person that God wants me to be. Hey, even from the person I want me to be. And God's not asking for penance. He's not asking us to vow that we'll try harder tomorrow. He's inviting us into relationship with him. That's the message of grace. Grace says that God pursues the lost. God pursues the guilty. God pursues the confused. And he invites us into relationship with him. And he has provided the way that we can have relationship with him. Through Christ. Through the cross. What's the meaning of the cross? It's not that God just demonstrated what a sacrificial guy he is. Something really profound happened and got accomplished in the cross of Christ. And which is that God took upon himself the death that you deserve. The sin that you carry. The source of your alienation from him. And he's not saying, okay, you earn that death. You earn that sacrifice. He's instead inviting us to participate in that by saying, I want that death to count for me. I want to approach you, God, not on the basis of my credentials, but on the basis of your mercy. I'm asking you, God, for a favor. I'm asking you to accept me, to have something real with me, a relationship with me that has nothing to do with my merit. That's the message of grace. It's the Old Testament message of grace. It's the New Testament message of grace. It's the message of grace for you here tonight who stand alienated from God and who are going to be at a place at some point where you come before a holy God. And God is appealing to you saying, don't come to me in your pride. Don't come to me with your accomplishments. Come to me with humility. Return to me in your heart. Receive what I've provided for you so that you can stand before me. Forgiveness, reconciliation, redemption, all these great themes that make up the Bible. And God is just calling on you. Will you return to me? It's grace. That's how we get reconciled with God. That's how we continue in a relationship with God. That is at the heart of what it means to be a servant of God, is to understand and to know the grace of God, the relationship that he seeks with us. And so God is calling Jeremiah back. Return to me. Boy, it would just be a terrible thing if we left here tonight without the clear understanding that everything that God wants for you is rooted in his grace. everything. The forgiveness that you need, grace. The relational closeness with a God who loves you, grace. The significance of a life led before Him, grace. God is not asking you to earn your significance, your acceptability, none of that. He wants to give that to you. And He's calling on Jeremiah, come home in your heart. If you're the one who here tonight who's been that dutiful guy, I've done the right things. I've stood alone. I've done, and I'm empty. You need grace. You need to understand that God's not interested in these things. He's interested in you. And it's because of something real with you that He wants to build a life that is significant. Not because of what we do, but because of the relationship that's there. If you return to me, He says, I will restore you. So, He says, so that you can continue to serve me. And I feel like that is such a very important little clause in this assurance that God gives Jeremiah. What He's saying is, hey, okay, so you've been building over here and you've come to the end of your resources and you're burned out and you've had enough. And there's a rift in your heart between me and you. I want to heal that rift, but I also want to continue to use you. I want to continue the work that I'm accomplishing in your life and through your life to other people that I'm trying to communicate this great message of grace to. And I think that's real important, that the real mark, I think, of a person who is returning to the Lord in their heart is that sense that, yeah, I do want to continue in the fight. I do sense that there's really nothing else important for me to live for. I remember that experience in the ministry of Christ towards the end, as the cost of commitment is heating up and more of Jesus' disciples are just no longer following Him. And they're all kind of going their own way. And Jesus comes to Peter and to the rest of the 12 disciples. This is John chapter 6, verse 67. And He says to them, do you not want to go away also with them? So He's giving them an out. He's saying, okay, if you had enough, go. But interestingly, Peter says to Him, verse 68, Lord, to whom shall we go? You alone have the word of eternal life. You alone, there's just no other answer. There's no other way. And we come to that place where we realize, no, the world's not an option. I've been there. I've done that. It's not to be relied on. I can't extract real significance from the world. I can't make things work under the assumptions that drive this world system. And where else can I go besides following Jesus Christ in my life? And Peter was at that place. I've been at that place. Many of us here also are at that place. Where else can you go? There's no other life, folks. The most screwed up people on this planet are not the really lost people who just don't know anything else. Well, there's plenty of misery there. But there's way more misery in the lives of people who know that it isn't necessarily going to have to go down like that, who know what's true, and who are stuck and will not follow Jesus Christ. The uncommitted believer. The believer who will not also be a disciple. Now here's a person who's really got his life between a rock and a hard place. The world's not an option, and I don't want to go God's way. Man, that's called being really stuck. You know, what are you about at that point? That's a very empty place to be. And Peter's like, where else can we go? You alone have the words of eternal life. And so there's this decision. Peter wasn't saying, I just feel so softly toward you, Jesus. You just really knock my socks off and I just want to follow. He's making a calculation. And he's saying, this is tough, but there's no other way. It's an important choice. And with that, too, he says, you know, if you speak good words rather than worthless ones, you'll be my spokesman. And so he's just calling on Jeremiah, and he's saying, look, the truth is still the truth. And you've got to continue saying what you know. That's the way out of this pain that you feel, is not to quit. It's to continue saying the things that you do know. And then he says, you must influence them and don't be influenced by them. And what voices are we heeding here? Are we heeding the advice of a world that doesn't give a damn about us? Who wants to chew you up, use you for what you have to offer, and then spit you out? You know, who's influencing who is what he's asking here. And that, I think, is a very important little piece to this. We've got to have in our minds, you know, an understanding and a critique of the things that we have left to follow Christ. And just a clear understanding that that's not the way to return. And then just whatever that means then for me at this moment in time. And maybe like Jeremiah, I'm going to have to stand alone or whatever it is. But I choose to stand on the truth of the matter. And then the second thing that God tells Jeremiah by way of assurance in verse 20 is this. He says, they will fight against you like an attacking army, but I will make you as secure as a fortified wall of bronze. They will not conquer you, for I am with you to protect you and rescue you. I, the Lord, have spoken. Now, this is a really awesome passage. What is God saying? He's saying, Jeremiah, I realize the chips are down. I understand the dangers you face, but I am a fortress to you. I'm a reliable wall between you and the dangers that you really do face. And this comes to Jeremiah really as a reminder. You may remember as we began our study, lo, those weeks ago in Jeremiah chapter 1, when God came to Jeremiah and says, hey, I want you to be my guy. I've got a message that I want to speak through you to my people. And Jeremiah, of course, realized the danger that involved. But God says, and this is Jeremiah chapter 1, verse 18, he says, now behold, I have made you today as a fortified city and a pillar of iron and as with walls of bronze against the whole land. And they will fight against you, but they will not overcome you, for I will deliver you. Now God said that however many years before this event that we're now describing here from chapter 15 ever happened. He said before he ever uttered his first word or entered into his first controversy, Jeremiah, I will be a fortress to you. And so now at this very dark moment in Jeremiah's life, God brings him back to that thing that he said so long ago. Jeremiah, I am a fortified wall of bronze to you. It's the same message. God is still God. And here's the thing. God's got a great message. That message hasn't changed. The same analysis of the culture, the same truth that God was pointing the people back towards through Jeremiah's words, that message is still there. The historic opportunity that Jeremiah really did have to be an agent of God, to communicate a message to people that holds forth the possibility of their returning to the Lord and finding themselves under his protection, of avoiding the inevitable churning of the empires that rise up in history to destroy. And Jeremiah had an historic moment. And that has not changed. The key things have not changed. But the thing about a wall as a fortress is that a wall is as a fortress is useless until it's tested, isn't it? And that is what's happening at this point. Jeremiah has gone from an untested, naive confidence in God that he had in the beginning to a place now where he really is under fire and those walls are being tested. Here's the question I'm asking you. Are you being tested? Are you being tested in your perspective on the life that God has called you to as a servant of the Lord? And we are going to be tested in a lot of different ways. We're going to be tested as we experience significant transitions in our life. You know, I used to know, I think, what it looked like to live for Christ when my kids were small enough to essentially program. I lost that perspective once they were old enough to talk back. And a lot of us are coming into an era of our life where there are high-stakes things going on with our children. And we know that we need to be in there with them, and legitimately so, appropriately so. And we wonder, well, what does it mean then for me to continue on as a servant of the Lord to really give myself to His purposes while I know that I've got this other thing that really is calling on my attention at home? Do you feel that tension? Man, my kids are 7 years apart, so I haven't been out of adolescence in 10 years, and I've still got several years to go. Man, it's a whole lot worse to go through it with your kids than it is to do it by yourself. If you believe something is at stake in how they grow up. Some of us are at really important transition points, having gone from single people or married to now young families, and we're wondering, you know, how do I pursue the things of God? How do I live as a real servant with and I'm tired all the time, and these kids, you know, just need, and I'm, you know, pulling my hair out. And I'm wondering, God, is there something fruitful for me to be involved with? Am I still a servant of yours, or am I out on the shelf? Some of us have come to the place where our children are released. Whew. And we're wondering, now where do I go? Now what? And it's at these important transition points in our life that our resolve is being tested, and that sense that I can accomplish things for God, that God is able to meet my needs and protect me even as I go out and lay down my life for Him. These things are challenged in the transitions. They're challenged at times where we go through times where we're feeling like we're not getting anything meaningful accomplished. No real results. And I've been interacting with a lot of us here tonight who are deeply invested in the lives of our home groups. It matters to us how these groups are going. And some of us are feeling fairly defeated about that. We just feel like, you know, the life of our communities is not that engaging, not that attractive. We feel like maybe we're not touching the world in a way that we would like to see God work through us. And our resolve to bear down and to really trust God and work through these areas of difficulty, you know, that's being tested in this time where we're wondering, where are the results? And our times of testing come to us as we reflect on the real inadequacies that truly are there, the limitations in our character, the limitations in our gifting, the inadequacy that some of us maybe feel like on an ongoing basis, I just don't know if I have what it takes to make a difference for the things that I know matter the most. And I think, you know, we will come to these places in our life, and God is saying to us, as he said to Jeremiah, I am a fortress to you. And my purposes for your life, they will prevail. And I'm asking you just to trust in me and move as I ask you to move. That's where you're going to find my protection. Paul puts it like this in 1 Corinthians 10. He says, no trial, no temptation in your life is different from what other people experience. Boy, when we're suffering, it always feels like I'm so unique. You know, no one suffers like I suffer. No one knows how it hurts to be in this life situation that I'm in and dealing with the things that I'm dealing with. We suffer from terminal uniqueness. But Paul says God is faithful, and he will not allow the temptation to be more than you can stand. And when you're tempted, he will show you the way so that you can endure. And that should be our prayer. Lord, show me the way so that I can stay in the fight, so that I continue to be your person on the spot where you've got me. And that's what God is calling Jeremiah to trust him in this way. And I just want to say by closing that Jeremiah did trust that God was his fortress. And Jeremiah did return to the Lord. And God began to restore him and do a great work in his life. And there is an enormous legacy that comes from this man who suffered so many years. God said he would protect him. He did. Jeremiah dies in Egypt as an old man of natural causes, with a fruitful written correspondence to the people of Jerusalem that are taken off into captivity into Babylon. God was faithful to his word to Jeremiah. He's faithful to his word to you. Through Jeremiah, God gave hope to people like Daniel in exile in Babylon, so that they would understand, what does it look like for me to trust God in the circumstances that I'm in? And how God used that so powerfully. You know, Jeremiah was getting his butt kicked up one side and down the other as he moved around the region of Judea and around the city of Jerusalem. He had to have been thinking to himself, man, this is futile. No one's listening. But it's very interesting that it's through Jeremiah's message and then the exile that came after that, that you never read ever again in the history of Israel a problem with idolatry. It's gone. Was Jeremiah effective and successful? Oh, yes, he was. Not in the way that he anticipated. Not according to the timetable that would have suited him. But absolutely, Jeremiah got the job done. And God not working in your timetable has great things for you to accomplish. Jeremiah communicated a beautiful vision of God's plan, not just for Israel, but for the entire world in this time of just trusting him and having that soft heart for him in this time of distress. And as we plug on into our study of Jeremiah, we're going to see that God knows exactly where this future is going, and because he has communicated with such clarity to Jeremiah that we can grow confident that, man, there is a sovereign Lord who superintends the events of history. It's awesome. Jeremiah succeeded. Not because he was great, not because he overcame so many things, but because he was willing to be honest with God about his complaints, that he was able to articulate his accusation, and that he was willing to return to the Lord and to trust him in a deep and new way. And God is calling on us in the same way. Why don't we pray together briefly, and then we'll go to discussion. Lord, you have us in the vice. And we sense that. We know that. The world to us, for so many of us, is not an option. And we know that we're not going to extract the things that the world offers to us. It just is an empty promise. And yet at the same time, too, like Jeremiah, we find ourselves at these places in our life where we're just pretty out of it. And we want to heed your word here tonight. We want to return to you in our hearts. We want to trust you as our fortress. And we know, God, that though we can't control it, and we often do not even know, that you will accomplish your word, your purpose through us as we present ourselves to you in this way. And I just thank you for that, Lord. You're so good. The things that you've called us to, so worth it. I pray that we would just be a community of people that are urging people and pressing each other forward to live the life that really does count. Amen.
This study was recorded at Xenos Christian Fellowship and is copyrighted. You may freely copy and distribute it as long as you keep it intact and do not sell it.